Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of College Football Insiders Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione, and we have a packed show for you today. I mean, we always have a packed show, but this time in 1 hour, we're really fitting a lot. Special guests include former defensive lineman Ray Childress of the Texas A&M Aggies, who was a member of the 2010 class of the College Football Hall of Fame. He was on hand at A&M last Saturday, where he was honored on Kyle Field by his former program, his former school. Also with us today are a pair of the top linebackers in the country, guys who are not getting a lot of love, but maybe they should be getting some more. They're both having fantastic seasons, and I'm talking about linebacker Nate Irving of North Carolina State, who's, you know, bouncing back from being in a horrific car accident, missed all of last season, and he's a big reason why the Wolfpack have control of their own destiny in terms of a path to the ACC championship game, coming off last week's upset over Florida State, in which Irving recovered a fumble to seal the game. Also, linebacker Doug Hoge from the Syracuse Orange, who suddenly find themselves in the mix for a bowl game, not just a bowl game. That's almost a sure thing right now if they can clinch one this Saturday with a win at home against Louisville. But they're right on the cusp of being ranked 27th and 28th in the polls. Boy, those days of Greg Robinson are starting to seem long, long time ago there in Central New York. And as also with us today are our regular guests, our insiders, Ralph Mancini, senior writer, associate editor at NFL Draft Bible. He'll be breaking down some of this week's big games, as well as our super scout, former Oregon State Beaver, Kelron Sykes. I'm filling in for Justin Van Fopen, who is on the PUP list. He's not able to perform for us this week. Filling in for him will be our super intern, Wes O'Donnell, who also writes for the College Football Insiders newsletter. He'll be talking a little bit about LSU-Alabama. He wrote the article in this week's CFI issue. That is our game of the week there in the College Football Insiders. And you can get that at NFLDraftBible.com. That's right, NFLDraftBible.com. And, you know, we have the game of the week there, a feature column on Stanford, our top 25. Don't forget to also follow us on Twitter at CFB Insiders. That's Twitter at CFB Insiders. That took a while just to intro the show and lay out everybody who's coming on. Six guests in 60 minutes. That's how we're doing it today. And we're going to jump right in it with our man, the Reverend Ralph Mancini from College Football Insiders, from NFL Draft Bible, from Fantasy Football Insiders. He does it all. Reverend, thanks for joining us. How's it going today?
Hey, Dan, that intro has me a little bit dizzy right now.
I needed some Gatorade after that intro just to, you know, recover and get back on the show. All right, Rev, let's jump into it, as the Russian guy says in that commercial. Arkansas at South Carolina, you know, as I said in the newsletter, it's not necessarily a game that's going to decide much in terms of the conference championship in the SEC. Most likely for South Carolina, it's going to come down to next week when they go to the Swan to take on the Gators. The winner of that game will probably advance. Arkansas has already lost to Auburn and Alabama, which obviously we're talking about two top five teams, nothing to be ashamed about, but that makes it unlikely for them to be a contender in the West. Nevertheless, this is one of the better games this weekend. And let's start with Arkansas on offense. Is there anything that South Carolina defense, mind you, without Chris Culliver, who's out with a torn pectoral muscle, he's expected to miss the season. Is there anything that South Carolina Gamecock defense can slow down Ryan Mallett, the only guy in the SEC who's averaging 300 yards per game through the air?
Yeah, I think that they could do quite a bit to stop this Razorback offense. I mean, you know, let's not forget, they're playing without their best receiver, Greg Childs, who is just a freak of nature. And I think that's really going to hurt the quarterback, Ryan Mallett, because Childs is the type of guy who's not only big, not only a guy who can make, you know, tremendous cuts in the open field, but he's a guy that makes the quarterback more comfortable, because you don't have to be pinpoint accurate to get the ball to Greg Childs. He's so athletic, and he's got such a long reach that, you know, he can make catches outside his frame. He can make acrobatic catches. And, you know, and then the other thing that worries me is if I were an Arkansas fan, the other thing that would worry me is the pass rush. You know, I mean, you're dealing with the ferocious front four that South Carolina has. In particular, you know, they have some big, mean defensive ends there in, Mr. Cliff Matthews and Devin Taylor. Both guys have tremendous wingspans. And, you know, I think that it's going to – they're really going to be a load. I think a key matchup here, you know, you take a look at DeMarcus Love, the left tackle, versus Cliff Matthews. Is he going to be able to stop him all game long? I think that's a tough task, you know. I mean, I know that DeMarcus Love is an excellent run blocker, and there's no doubt in my mind that he can sustain blocks in the running game. But, you know, in terms of stopping Matthews on the pass rush – I mean, Cliff Matthews, I think, is just too active. He's too strong, and he's got a big motor that I don't think you can shut him down. And then over on the other side, you have Ray Dominguez, who, you know, I mean, he's no stalwart back there. He's had some problems this year, and he goes up against Devin Taylor, who, you know, you talk about long reaches. He's a guy who's 6'7". And he's been coming on and playing better and better each and every week. So I really think Arkansas's offense, I should say, really has its hands full this week.
Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, Arkansas does have that elite tackle in Love. But, you know, with two pass-rushing defensive ends from South Carolina, that means one of those guys is going to be going against the number two tackle. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to get pressure on Mallett. And I think you'll agree with me, Rev, as we've seen this year, that's when Mallett makes some of his mistakes. I mean, if you give him time to sit back in the pocket, scan the defense, and cock and load, he's going to shred your defense. But if you put a little pressure on him, sometimes he does try to force the football a little bit. So I think that could be the key to this game. As you mentioned, Greg Childs is out. Also, Joe Adams is questionable for Arkansas, so that they could be down two of their top receivers. That'll definitely hurt. How about on the flip side, when South Carolina has the ball, they're obviously going to look first and foremost to establish the running game with that, you know, stellar freshman who I know you're a big fan of. I'm a big fan of Mr. Lattimore, who is, you know, fulfilling all that five-star potential. He's second in the SEC in rushing behind Cam Newton. He's the only running back averaging over 100 yards per game in conference, so that means he's outdoing guys like Trent Richardson and out of Alabama, and as well as Mr. Ingram, the defending Heisman Trophy winner. Can that Arkansas defense slow down Lattimore, who's been, you know, looking like a veteran in SEC play?
Yeah, I really don't see it. I mean, Marcus Lattimore, he returned from an ankle injury last week against Tennessee, had 184 yards and a touchdown on 29 carries. I mean, this kid has it all. When you talk about vision, strength, lateral movement, I think what worries me about Mr. Lattimore, if I were Arkansas, you know, the fact that their interior linemen, Brian Jones and LaVance Askew, they tend to play a little high, and they give up way too much ground to the offensive line. And then backing them up, they have a bunch of linebackers and safeties that have trouble wrapping up and tackling guys. So, you know, when you're dealing with a downhill runner like Lattimore, I think that's a recipe for disaster. I look for Lattimore to have a big game. I look for South Carolina to jump out to the early lead and force Arkansas to pass the ball, and that's when they're going to start having problems with the pass rush.
Yeah, Rev, and the thing is, too, with this Arkansas defense, this is a fast, speedy defense. You know, they've moved defensive end to outside linebackers to safety to get some more speed, but it also makes them smaller. And against a power running guy, like you said, a downhill guy, that could be a recipe for disaster. So I'm going to ask you for your pick, Reverend. I mean, you said they might get to Mallett. You said it's going to be tough to stop Lattimore. Sounds like you're leaning towards the Gamecocks in this one.
Yeah, all the way. I'd say Gamecocks 35-24.
All right, folks, like I said, it might not be the most important game in terms of BCS or conference ramifications, but don't forget to check this game out on ESPN. Arkansas at South Carolina should be a good game for sure. We have a couple of games in the Big Ten before we let you go. Northwestern at Penn State. Your Nittany Lions broke loose last week with a big game by Evan Royster and their backup quarterback. Reverend, was that Penn State breaking out and finding themselves on offense, or was that a one-week wonder and more courtesy of that porous Michigan defense?
No, I think Penn State's offense is improving, and I think it's improving because of the offensive line. The offensive line has been getting progressively better each and every week, and this is not going to be a normal game for Penn State. You know, they're trying to get Joe Paterno his 400th win, which is unprecedented in college football, and so I think that they're going to be extremely motivated. They're going to have a big home field advantage. However, against Northwestern, though, that could be a little tough. I mean, because Northwestern actually has a good road team. Over the past two Novembers, Northwestern has a 6-1 record on the road. So I don't think Northwestern's going to be intimidated by the fact that they are going to be playing on the road, and, you know, Penn State's going to be trying to get Paterno his 400th win. I think the key to this game is I think Penn State needs to keep the quarterback, Northwestern's quarterback, Dan Persa, in the pocket. And, you know, they have to let him beat them by throwing the ball underneath. And over on offense, Penn State needs to maintain some balance. That means the ball to Derek Moy versus a Northwestern defense that's giving up nearly 250 passing yards per game, and then get Royster going behind an improved offensive line. I think if they can do those three things, I think Penn State could win this game. I think they will win this game. It's going to be competitive, though. I could see Penn State winning 27-23.
All right, Rev likes a close one there. Dan Persa is coming off a concussion, but he's considered to be probable for this game on Saturday. Obviously, if somehow he couldn't go or got re-injured, that would be a devastating blow to Northwestern's chances of pulling off the upset. One more game, Rev, staying in the Big Ten, Illinois at Michigan. Reverend, I think this is such a huge game for the Wolverines. Three losses in a row. Last year, this was kind of their Waterloo when they went to Champaign and got spanked by a bad, bad Illinois team. This year, the game's in the Big House, but Illinois is much improved. Which team do you think kind of takes a step forward in this game? I think it's a little bit of a pivotal game for both teams and could decide how both programs go the rest of the way.
Yeah, I like the way Illinois is playing. I mean, they've made improvements on offense. Their redshirt freshman quarterback, Nathan Shieldhouse, has been great over the past two games, has over 300 yards and six touchdowns while rushing for 163 yards over the past 2 weeks. And their defense has really improved. I mean, Illinois ranks 12th nationally in scoring defense and 15th in total yards allowed. You know, I think that Denard Robinson and company, they're not going to have an easy time against a defense that's not only aggressive but also has some speed. You know, in particular, you know, they have this kid out there, Martez Wilson, middle linebacker. He makes a lot of splash plays. He leads the team with 68 tackles. I mean, this is a guy you need to watch out for. I think it's going to be a relatively high-scoring game, but as I said, I like the Illinois defense to keep Michigan in check, not totally shut down Denard Robinson, but keep him under his season averages. And I would say I like Illinois in this game, probably by a score of about 33-28.
Interesting, Rev. It's really hard for me to argue with any of your points. I'm going to be stubborn here and pick Michigan at home to kind of salvage their season a little bit. Maybe, not definitely, but maybe save Rich Rod's job. Also, JT Floyd is out, their starting corner. So if you thought it can't get worse for the Michigan defense, think again, because it just might. That defense has been terrible. But, I want to defend Robinson a little bit. I want to stay on the Robinson bandwagon as many people are jumping off. I remember last week during the Penn State game, they threw up a graphic of, oh, look, he hasn't done well with the tougher competition. Meanwhile, he was still averaging 4.9 yards a carry, which last time I checked is pretty good, and that was against Wisconsin and Michigan State, two one-loss teams, and he only played, six quarters. He missed half the game and still averaged 95 yards against those two teams. Last week against Penn State, he threw for 190 and ran for 190. I mean, if he didn't have the 200 and 200-yard performances early in the season, people will be raving about this game. So don't jump off the Denard Robinson bandwagon just yet. It's not his fault that there's, you know, talent lacking around him and the defense is porous. But, you know, for Michigan to win, he's got to play like a superstar. Otherwise, they don't have a chance. All right, Rev, thanks a lot for joining us. And everybody, listen to the Fantasy Football Insiders on Sunday, with where Ralph is joined with Ross Mandel and Rick Serratella. What time is that show on the Fantasy Sports Channel, Rev?
8:30, bright and early.
8:30 every Sunday morning. They'll get you the best fantasy tips before you make that lineup out for Sunday's games. Rev, thanks a lot, and talk to you next week.
All right, take care, Dan. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, the Reverend Ralph Mancini, as I said, from NFL Draft Bible, from College Football Insiders, from Fantasy Football Insiders. He is like our Swiss Army knife. He does it all. All right, we're going to jump right into the interview here with Nate Irving, linebacker from North Carolina State.
Joining us now on this College Football Insiders Player Spotlight is linebacker Nate Irving of the North Carolina State Wolfpack. He's got 59 tackles this season, 10.5 for a loss, 3 sacks, and 1 key fumble recovery last week, sealing the Wolfpack's victory over Florida State. Nate, let's start there. Let me ask you, you know, what kind of feeling went through you when you recovered that fumble and sealed that victory against the Florida State Seminoles?
I was just so happy down there at the bottom of the pile. And me and my teammate, J.R. Smith, was down there fighting for the ball. So, you know, after it came out, I heard him talking. I knew that one of us had it, so it helped us win the game.
Now, you guys were down 21-7, gave up 21 unanswered in the second quarter. What did you do differently in the second half to hold the Seminoles to just 3 points?
First, we got to get credit for the explosive team that came here and executed the way they did. But we just knew we were coming out the locker room. And we talked about it amongst ourselves and the coaches that we had to come back, you know, just one play at a time. So we couldn't, you know, make up 21 points just like that one play. So we just had to hang in there and keep fighting and just execute the way we were supposed to.
And talk a little bit about, you know, this season, your senior year, under a new linebacker coach, John Tenuta, who's known for being very aggressive. He loves his linebackers to attack. Has his style suited yours?
I think it helped our whole defense, you know. It doesn't have us sitting back on our heels, you know, and ready to, we're heads on our chest, ready to take home blocks. So we're just going to tack down instead of waiting on them to come in and tack us.
And do you feel that, you know, you yourself personally, that you're better that way? You'd rather be moving forward, attacking the line of scrimmage?
Yes, I think, you know, with any good defense, you know, you have to reestablish the line of scrimmage. And I think that we do a good job of doing that.
Now, you know, let me take a little bit of back, you know, to last year, and you suffered that serious car injury, separated shoulder, collapsed lung, cracked ribs, compound fracture in your left leg. Nate, did I leave anything out?
That sounds
you know, did you picture yourself coming back and being basically back to your regular self and putting up the kind of impressive numbers that you are?
I knew I was going to come back. I didn't know, you know, how it was going to be, but I was ready to do anything that the coach asked me to do on the team.
And do you feel 100%? Do you feel like you did as a junior? And now, you know, how about off the field? And maybe it does apply to the field as well. How has this, you know, this endeavor that you had to go through and suffer through and fight through, how has that kind of changed you? And, you know, from what I understand, that you've kept pictures of the accident and everything. Is there any particular reason for that?
It's just so I'm able to show people, you know, what I went through. And whenever I'm talking to somebody and they're having a hard time, you know, just battling something, I tell them, you know, about my story and how I persevered and that, you know, everybody goes through things for a reason. Just tell them to stay strong.
Now, I understand also last year, while you were unable to play football, you interned with the sports information department, kind of working on the opposite end of the media spectrum, working, you know, helping out the school. How did that come about?
Out here, and I was talking to kind of friends about, internships, like before this even happened, like 4 months in a year, I had a couple guys from like they did their internship with media relation, and I had a pretty good relationship with Annabelle, so I just thought that going in there and then working with her and learning from her was going to be a good experience. So.
And we're talking to Nate Irving, linebacker of the North Carolina State Wolfpack, who ranked 23rd in the AP poll, 25th in the coaches and the BCS. Nate, I also saw where your coach talked about the upcoming game this week against Clemson and, you know, basically not wanting you guys to be too high off the win against Florida State. You got another big game. How do you stay focused after such a big win? Now, as a senior and as the captain, do you take it upon yourself to take some responsibility to send that message to the rest of the defense?
I think that's what you have to do, and especially being a captain of the team. You have to go out and show the team that you're willing to work hard and what you expect
All right, Nate, thanks a lot for giving us some time. I know you got to run. Congratulations on your season so far and making it all the way back. It's a great story.
All right, that was Nate Irving, linebacker of North Carolina State. The Wolfpack have a big game this week against Clemson, and, you know, if they can keep on winning, they might make the ACC championship for the first time. Now coming on is Wes O'Donnell, our pinch hitter, so to speak, filling in for Justin Van Fulpen, who can't be on today. Wes, how's it going? Thanks for coming on today.
It's going good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it was perfect because Justin was slotted to talk a little Alabama-LSU. And you already wrote about this game for the College Football Insiders newsletter, which, as I mentioned earlier, you can get by going to NFLDraftBible.com and signing up to become an all-access football member. Wes, let's start when Alabama has the ball. I think this is going to be key here. I mean, that LSU offense is just so putrid. I kind of want to stay away from even talking about that game. But if they have any chance of beating the Crimson Tide, I think their defense is going to have to play well. How do you see that matchup, Alabama's offense with Julio Jones and the two-headed backfield of Ingram and Trent Richardson against that LSU defense, which is stacked with some talented players?
Yeah, this is going to be the best part of the game. First off, on the outside, we get to see a rematch last year of Patrick Peterson versus Julio Jones. Jones ended up with, I think, 7 catches for a little bit over 100 in that game, but none of them happened to come against Peterson, who actually shut him down when they were matched up together. So this is going to be important as Bama throws about twice, or he's caught twice the amount of balls as any other receiver for the Tide so far this year. Peterson, as we know, is arguably the best defensive player in the country, probably headed for a top 5, possible top 10 pick next year. So that's going to be fun to watch. And then the running game, it's going to be important to see how LSU rebounds after giving up 440 yards on the ground to Cam Newton and Auburn a couple weeks ago. You just said, the two-headed running attack of Trent Richardson and Mark Ingram, as good as it gets in the country, and Alabama takes advantage of anything that they're given. So it's going to be fun on that side of the ball.
Let me ask you this. You know, Alabama does like to go to that wildcat, and that was huge for them in a couple of big games last year with Ingram. Do you think with the success of Richardson, they may use a little bit more of that and get that extra blocker in?
Yeah, that we've seen what Auburn ran 2 weeks ago with Cam Newton is almost the same thing as a wildcat. So That's definitely something they could use to the effect of the same tune. 440 yards is a lot of yards, 220 of them done by Newton. So if Alabama can get even – close to half that, I'm sure they'll be happy. They already average 186 on the ground going into this game. And they have a lot going on, a lot to play for heading into this. So,
all right. Also, I need to mention that DJ Fluker, their talented sophomore tackle is questionable. He's missed the last two games. Wes, which team stays in the SEC West race? This is a bit of an elimination game.
Yeah, Alabama controls their own destiny really here. Fortunately for them, their one loss this season came early enough where if they can ride out from here, they'll get a crack at Auburn in the Iron Bowl at the end of the season. So, at the they still have this game against LSU, then they play a ranked Mississippi State team, and then they get a bit of a bye against that newly formed Georgia State team, and then the Iron Bowl, and then hopefully an SEC title for them. And then LSU just has to hope, they've only got one loss as well, despite all their offensive woes. They have to hope for a trip up from Auburn somewhere and take care of business on this end, too. They end with Arkansas at the end of the year. I do think that Alabama is a superior team to this LSU squad. Offensively, LSU has a lot of troubles. Their quarterback, Tim, has only thrown four touchdown passes combined on the year. And they've been fortunate to be in as many games and win as many games as they have so far. So in the preview, as you said, I think I went with 31-10 in favor of Alabama.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you, Wes. I don't know if it's going to be a 21-point blowout, but it could be. I see something in that 14-17-point range. I think Lady Luck will not be with the Tigers this Saturday in Baton Rouge. One more game, Wes, here before we head off to the round table, and that's Baylor against Oklahoma State. Now, if you had this game being between two ranked foes before the season started, maybe we should bring you on board and make you a college football insider, but that's where we are right now. Baylor is actually in first place in the Big 12 South. Oklahoma State and Oklahoma are both a half a game behind, and really the driving force behind this Baylor run, this 7-2 start that they have, is their quarterback, Robert Griffin. What's your stock watch on him, both as a potential Heisman candidate and as a future pro?
This kid's fun to watch. If you remember, his freshman year, he burst onto the scene, put up big numbers, grabbed the medical red shirt last year after blowing out his ACL, and came back this year. They started off, winning ball games, but then they went into Fort Worth and got absolutely smashed by TCU, 45-10. Griffin looked almost shell-shocked, couldn't do anything. He brings about a dual-threat ability, almost equivalent to that of Terrell Pryor of Ohio State. If you actually put their numbers next to each other this year and take away the name, you would have a hard time differentiating from who is who. In fact, you could probably say Griffin's numbers come out better with 20 touchdowns and only 5 picks. He's got 7 rushing touchdowns. Pryor's got 4. So, the only thing difference in between those two major difference is the height. Griffin's only 6'2", whereas Pryor's 6'6". For the Baylor offense, though, he's what makes him go. And it's just really fun to watch him play. As for NFL draft prospects, if you want to look at the numbers, what you say about Pryor could almost be the same thing other than the height for what you say about Griffin. Some people have said maybe there's a position change coming for him. He's got another 2 years to at least prove it if he wants to. So we'll see what he can do. And this game this weekend is going to be fun against what should be a shootout against the team that just wants to throw the ball around and score points like none other.
All right, before we leave this game, Wes, who's on first? After Saturday, will it be Baylor still on top of the Big 12 South, or will Oklahoma State jump them?
It's as tough a call as we're going to get. They both put up points. Oklahoma State gives up more points than what Baylor has so far this year. Oklahoma State's going to come out with – they're going to get Blackman back this week, and he's as good of a receiver, if not one of the best, other than AJ Green in the country right now. His production is absolutely through the roof. He did a number on Prince Amukamara, who's arguably the top corner in this class, Nebraska, a couple of weeks ago. So, and Kendall Hunter likes to run the ball. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to go with the home team in this game, though. I'm going to take the Baylor Bears. Oh, I'm sorry, Oklahoma State. I'm going to take Oklahoma State.
You're going with the Pokes.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to take Oklahoma State at home.
I agree with you. I'm going with the Pokes as well. I see this being a 2-touchdown game. I was not the biggest fan of Oklahoma State when the year started. I actually thought Baylor would finish ahead of them. Oak State would finish last in that division. I've been way off. And, I'm still not sold on them, when they were creeping up the polls. But I think they've proven enough, and I think they're going to pull this one out and stay in that Big 12 South race along with the rival Sooners. All right, folks, it's time for the roundtable, and that means it's time for Kelron Sykes. Kelron, what's up? What's going on?
Hey, how's everything going?
Pretty good, Kelron. I mean, we're into November. It's basically this is crunch time in the college football season, and every week we're having games that are deciding, you know, conference titles and BCS titles. And let's start there with the BCS title game and the BCS Buster teams. There's two factions here, so to speak. There's the WAC team, Boise State, and there's the Mountain West, which we'll know more about after this week when Utah plays TCU. Right now, just to set the table for you guys, TCU is number 3 in the BCS standings. Boise is number 4. Utah is number 5. So these teams are closely bunched. Which team is more deserving, Kelron, of making that BCS title game? Is it Boise State, or do you think it's the winner of this Saturday's Mountain West clash?
Golly, Dan, you know how I feel. I just with the scheduling that, you know, all three of these teams have had, it's really tough to say that, you know, one of the three teams are deserving. But if I had to pick one of the three, I would probably say TCU for the simple fact they did play a Pac-10 team in Oregon State. You know, i.e. Boise State did as well, but, you know, this is their second or third matchup versus a top 25 team. Unlike Boise, you know, where they have the likes of New Mexico State and La Tech and Fresno State, you know, they still play Nevada coming up in the coming weeks. But if I had to choose one of the three, I would definitely say TCU as of now.
And would you say Utah, let's say if Utah wins the game on Saturday, would you say Utah or would you go to Boise then?
Wow, another tough one. Utah's played tremendous football this year, as well as Boise. All three of these teams, you know, you give kudos to those guys. But Boise State will probably get the nod over Utah.
All right, Wes, how about you? What's your take? What, you know, which team would be more deserving of a chance to play in that BCS title game? Is it the Broncos, the Bluefield Darlings, or is it the Mountain West champ, Utah or TCU, coming after this Saturday?
Pending this Saturday, I'm going to have to agree with Kelron on it being TCU. They're just an impressive bunch to watch with Wesley running the ball and Andy Dalton making decisions under center and Jeremy Curley on the outside. And the defense only gives up less than 9 points a game. And they haven't played the best of talent, but, I mean, they're as dominant as a team can arguably be, in my opinion. If they were to fall to Utah, who, as we just said, is playing phenomenal football this year, then I would have to revert to Boise State just because they're there as well. Utah's done it this year, but Boise State's, I guess, they're just, I would put them next. I can't necessarily explain it. I just think that they'd be a better team over Utah.
And you can be sure, we just talked about Baylor, Oklahoma State. You can be sure TCU will be rooting for Baylor to win that game. That definitely helps them when it comes to the BCS. Wes, let's stay with you. Stock up. Whose stock is up right now the most, do you think?
In the whole nation talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple guys. One guy definitely to keep an eye or have been keeping an eye on is Derek Sherrod, the offensive tackle from Mississippi State. He's been going up the board as steadily as any player so far this year at 6'5", 300-plus pounds. That team's ranked in the top 25 now. I think they're 20th overall. The offensive line paved the way for a running game that averages 218 a game. He's got quick speed. He does a good job against the speed rush and pushing everything outside. And one thing he's done really well this year is getting into the second level in the run game and showing his ability off the edge. I definitely like Derek Sherrod right now moving up into a legitimate first-round potential offensive tackle.
Good choice there. I'm a big fan of Sherrod as well. He impressed me early on when they took on Auburn. We have a write-up on him on our Scouts Notebook. You can check that out at NFLDraftBible.com. And, Kelron, how about you? Stock up.
Well, I was bringing down the Oregon State film, and I was watching Stephen Paya, and his first step is so explosive, and he's so strong at the anchor and the point of attack. Many of the bigwigs, the scouts, had him as a first-round pick, and he kind of drifted, you know, in the early parts of the season. And a lot of people say he was, you know, injured, had an ankle injury, had a domino injury. But he's really come on the last couple of weeks. And, golly, he's so powerful. Like I said, he's so strong at the point of attack, and he's been rushing the passer really well. He showed an array of pass rushing moves that's really, you know, solidified himself as a day one pick. And also we'll go to the small ranks. A linebacker at Eastern Washington, J.C. Sherrod, a smaller guy, 5'11", 220, but he's a tackling machine. I saw the game against Sacramento State. Wow, this kid is all over the field. And he's a candidate for the Buchanan Award, which is a top defender in 1AA schools, but he is a tackling machine. And if he gets an invite to the East-West, he will have an opportunity to kind of, you know, up his stock, so to speak. So it'll be interesting to see how the, you know, the weeks to come, if he, you know, keeps his tackle total up to a high.
All right, nice job, Kelron, dipping into the small schools as well. And, Kelron, we'll stay with you. Tonight's game, ACC Big Clash, Georgia Tech visiting Virginia Tech. The Hokies have won 6 in a row. Give us a player to watch in tonight's game, prospect watch.
Well, my guy, Sean Bedford, the center out of Georgia Tech, will not be playing today. So I'm going to go with Rashad Carmichael, the corner out of Virginia Tech. He's in that line of great defensive players in that back seven, or excuse me, that back four of Virginia Tech, another shutdown corner who likes to press at the, you know, on receivers, and he's able to flip his hips and run with guys. He has 4 picks on the season, so watch him tonight. He should be an outstanding game.
Yeah, it's amazing. They produce corners year in and year out. Wes, how about you? Tonight's game, Georgia Tech against at Virginia Tech, prospect watch.
That's funny. I was leaning towards Carmichael, too, as a solid, solid pick. The kid can play ball. I think one other guy you have to watch who's had a down year and then played by an injury for a while was redshirt sophomore running back Ryan Williams, who was as dominant can be last season. He came back with 6 carries and only 10 yards and a touchdown a week ago, or the last game against Duke. I think he's someone to keep an eye on, who's got to get back, get it back together. Virginia Tech's been on a tear since the loss at home against James Madison. So this will be an important thing if he can get back healthy and make something happen.
All right, a pair of guys to watch for the Hokies, one on offense, one on defense. Wes, thanks a lot for filling in today. We really appreciate it. Great analysis.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, that was Wes O'Donnell from College Football Insiders and NFL Draft Bible. We're going to stick with our super scout here, Kelron Sykes, former Oregon State Beaver, and we're going to go out to your conference, Kelron. Pac-10, the big game this week is Arizona against Stanford, a pair of top 15 teams, you know, kind of duking it out for being the second team, so to speak, in the Pac-10 behind Oregon. Arizona, obviously, if they win, they still have a chance to challenge the Ducks for a title. It's going to be more difficult for Stanford. They're going to need Oregon to lose 2 games for them to get back in the hunt. But I think the key matchup here is that Stanford offense, great offensive line, physical running game, big-time quarterback, maybe the best in the country against an Arizona defense that really brings it. They're the best in the Pac-10 against the run, and they've also produced the most sacks. Break down that matchup for us, Stanford's offense against that Arizona defense.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, Arizona, particularly their front four, and particularly Ricky Elmore and Brooks Reed, those guys bring pressure off the corner, you know, like no other in the conference. And it's going to be particularly interesting to see what Stanford can do. Stanford obviously has a multiple set. You know, they'll go mass protection, they'll go play action pass. So if Stanford is able to keep Arizona off balance in terms of those guys not necessarily speed rushing up the field, I think Stanford will win by at least 10 points. Now, if Arizona is able to get pressure on Luck and slow the game down and put them in second and long and third and long, and Arizona's been, you know, just been dominant in that area. Obviously, they're number 7 in the nation in scoring defense and 6 rushing defense. If they can put Stanford in a third and long, second and long, I think they pull away with the victory.
So another key, obviously, in this game is Nick Foles, and if he plays, he's listed as probable, but, you know, that was what we read last week, and he did not play. The other kid, Scott, has filled in and has played pretty well, but, you know, he played against Washington and UCLA. That's not really going up against Stanford. It's a much tougher game. I myself will feel more comfortable with Foles in there. How much a difference does that make to you, and what is your pick in this game?
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. I mean, Nick Foles is definitely one of the top 3 or 4 quarterbacks in the Pac-10. And his leadership and his moxie on the field, the other 10 players kind of thrive off of that. And he's definitely, you know, this is definitely a big-time game for those guys. I mean, you know, they have SC coming up in Oregon and obviously Arizona State in the following weeks, referring to the Wildcats. So we're talking about a stretch of very, very important games. And obviously this being the first one, you know, in the beginning month of November. So if Foles doesn't play, it's going to hurt them big time for the simple fact, like I said, Stanford, you know, they're talking about, you know, going 11-1 or 12-10-2 possibly. So I think it's big for him to play. But once again, I'm going to give an edge to Stanford right now. I just like the moxie, you know, their head coach. I like the moxie of their team. You know, they're playing cocky. They're playing confident. And it's hard to beat a team that's playing confident, in particular the month of November. So I'm definitely going to give an edge to Stanford.
Yeah, the Cardinals have been playing well, and it's really hard to disagree with that pick. I got to go with Stanford as well. Physical, old-school kind of football team. Almost looks more like a Big Ten team than a Pac-10 team. All right, Kelron, thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
And that is Kelron Sykes, our Super Scout, former Oregon State Beaver. And now before we bring on our BCS Buster, Mr. BCS Buster Kenny Franek, to talk about those games, we're going to talk to Ray Childress. I spoke to him earlier this week, College Football Hall of Famer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of College Football Insiders Radio's Player Spotlight. And this is a special Hall of Fame edition, as with us today is Ray Childress, who's part of the College Football Hall of Fame class of 2010. As a Texas A&M Aggie defensive lineman, Childress was a two-time All-American, recording 25 sacks as a junior and a senior. The Memphis, Tennessee native was selected third overall by the Houston Oilers in the 1985 NFL Draft and went on to have a stellar 12-year pro career, which included five Pro Bowl selections. This past Saturday, he was honored at Texas A&M for his election into the College Football Hall of Fame. Ray, how are you doing today, and thanks for joining us? Well, let me ask you right off the top, you know, I know your son is playing there now, but how often have you been back to Kyle Field since you played for the Aggies?
Well, every chance I get, you know, to go watch him play football, and, you know, we've been going to all the regular season home games, you know, for the last several years.
And what was it like on Saturday, you know, to be honored back on the field before the game along with Coach Stallings? You know, as I mentioned at the top, your son Wells is on the team, so I'm sure you like that it worked out that the year you are elected, he's on the team. How cool is it there to have your son part of the program and part of this at the same time? Let me ask you this, Ray. How did you find out you were elected into the College Football Hall of Fame? Did you get a call? Did you receive something in the mail?
Both. Coach Manning is considered a good friend. He gave me a call, and then coincidentally the same day, delivered to my house with this really cool football. Painted up Ray Childress, you know, Texas A&M University, member of the 2010 College Football Hall of Fame.
And was this something that, you know, you were thinking about at all, that you had in your mind at all?
Well, you know, there's been talk the last couple of years, Dan, that, you know, I was obviously up for it. People were talking about supporting me and things like that, yes.
And what, bringing you back to your playing days, you know, what would you say is your fondest memory from when you suited up for the Aggies?
Senior year, we beat a couple of top 25 teams in TCU and Texas, and you know, that was it was a great time in my life, bud.
Yeah, I read a quote from your former coach, Jackie Sherrill, who said that typically you were a quiet leader, but leading up to those games, you guys were shut out by Arkansas, and you kind of challenged everybody, and they stepped up to knock off TCU and Texas. Do you kind of remember that?
Yeah, of course I do. You know, I have fond memories of all that. And, you know, but really what I remember the most is just, you know, having the opportunity to compete. You know, I think that's what's such a great thing about football. It's a wonderful team sport. You know, you have to make a commitment to a team. You go out there and you don't know what the results are going to be, but you got to show up, you got to play, and that's the opportunity you want.
You're listening to College Football Insiders Radio. With us right now is Ray Childress, former Texas A&M Aggie and College Football Hall of Famer. Ray, let me ask you, what do you think of the 2010 Aggies? They're 5-3 now. Tough slate coming off. They're coming off back-to-back wins.
Well, you know, I'm a big believer. You know, it's always dark as right before the light. And, you know, I'm an optimist, and I'm hoping that A&M and Coach Sherman and all those wonderful players up there, maybe they turned, you know, maybe they turned against Missouri. Man, that was a dark point in their season. And they lost a tough team at Oklahoma State, which is a good team. They lost, you know, in Dallas against Arkansas, who's a good team. They played poorly against Missouri, but they played really well the last couple of weeks. And, you know, maybe they turn for the season and go play, you know, good against Oklahoma, Baylor, Nebraska, and Texas.
That's
a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, they definitely have a tough road headed up, but like you said, you know, maybe they kind of found something after that Missouri game, playing well the last 2 weeks, and they may have found something at the quarterback position with Tannehill having such a great game on Saturday. You know, were you surprised that Jared Johnson, the all-time leading passer, was benched? I know they kind of shared duties last week, and it was a question mark leading in, but was it a surprise at all?
I think I know a lot about football. On one hand, football is a very brutal, hostile sport, and then on the other hand, it's a delicate sport. You know, it's just, you know, you gotta have the right people on the field for that situation. And Gerard is a wonderful young man, a wonderful player. And Ryan Tannehill came in. You know, he threw for 450 yards. More importantly, he scored about 45 points. And you know, the offense looked really good.
Yeah, boy, they did. It's hard to argue with the decision right now, that's for sure. It definitely worked out right for A&M with that big explosion on the offensive side of the ball. You know, you were a former Pro Bowl and All-Pro defensive lineman in the NFL. Right now, A&M has a kid named Von Miller, who I'm sure everybody knows and who's projected by a lot of people as a potential first-round pick. What are your thoughts on Von and his chances at the next level?
I think he's a prototype NFL pass rushing linebacker. I mean, there's got to be NFL teams drooling to get their hands on him. I think he's the best pure pass rusher in college football. He's remarkable. I mean, you know, break my heart when I see him go back in pass coverage. He will excel and be great in the NFL because of the way he can move.
I'm sorry, Kenny, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here now. I can hear you.
All right, great. We had a little technical difficulty then, folks. Sorry about that. And our Mr. BCS Buster, Kenny Flanagan, is with us here. And obviously the game of the week, Kenny, let's jump right into it. TCU at Utah. Break it down a little bit when the Utes have the ball.
Well, the bottom line is they need to sustain and put together long drives to tire out the TCU defense. Obviously, it's a top-ranked defensive unit in the country. And they need to keep, the experienced Andy Dalton and company off the field. The running backs, Matt Asiata and Eddie Wide, they need to run effectively. And Jordan Wynn needs to keep his composure. You know, he's only a sophomore. This is the biggest game of his career. So he needs to keep his composure throughout the game, not force anything, and just make smart decisions. I mean, he only has 6 interceptions on the year, and that number better stay the same after this game is over. Otherwise, it's going to be a long night for Utah.
And a key there for Utah is Devontae Christopher, their wide receiver, one of their better players on offense, is considered probable. He missed the Air Force game with a knee injury, but he is expected to go on Saturday. How about when TCU has the ball and Utah is on defense? What should we keep an eye on there?
Oh, well, Utah is they're very good at protecting the ball. They don't, do anything dumb with it. They don't really turn it over. So they just need to continue to play smart football, protect the football. Like they have all season, they just need to stick to their game plan and basically let Andy Dalton do what he does, and that's control the game. He only has 5 interceptions all season, and their running backs as well, Ed Wesley and Matthew Tucker, have yet to have a fumble this year. So, pretty much just, run their game like they're normally doing right now, and they should be good to go.
Yeah, it's an intriguing matchup. We're talking about number 3 in the BCS against number 5. They're 1-2 in the Mountain West in scoring offense and scoring defense. TCU's beaten teams by 32 points, Utah by 31 points. I think whichever team is able to win the ground game, Kenny, I think will come out victorious. You're talking about Asiata and Eddie Wide have 15 touchdowns between them. TCU's rush defense has allowed only 3. Ed Wesley, a guy you brought up, is on the verge of going for 1,000 yards, but Utah's allowing only 2.9 yards per carry. So which team ends up as the team to beat in the Mountain West and kind of stakes a claim to that conference crown this Saturday?
It's got to be TCU. I mean, I know they've never won in Salt Lake in the 3 visits there, but, I mean, their defense is so stout. They've only given up 16 points in their last 5 games, and they did beat them pretty handily last year, 55-28 in Fort Worth. I see TCU just overpowering them, especially with their defense. I mean, I think even if TCU can't get a complete ground game going, I think they'll have enough on defense to stop them and put enough points on the board to win.
I can't disagree with you, Kenny, but I think Utah at home will give them a game. Remember 2 years ago, TCU was undefeated. Utah was undefeated. TCU was favored on the road. Utah pulled off the upset. I don't think this Utah team is quite as good, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do give TCU a game. Kenny, quickly, in less than a minute if you can, Hawaii at Boise State, any chance for an upset there?
There is a chance. I mean, they got the leading passer in the country in Bryant Moniz. He needs to, work that spread offense to perfection and not make any mistakes. So, I mean, if he starts turning the ball over, it's going to be a quick short night for Hawaii, but, like they say, that's why they play the game, because anything can happen. So there's definitely a shot at an upset there.
All right, Kenny, thanks a lot for joining us. We're going to have to let you go. We'll bring you back next week, though, maybe talk about Boise, who's better, Boise State or the Mountain West champ. Thanks a lot, Kenny.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
All right, we're going to go quickly to our final interview of the day, another linebacker, Doug Hogue from the University of Syracuse.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of College Football Insider's Player Spotlight. With us today is Doug Hogue from Syracuse. He's got 57 tackles, 7-4 loss, 2.5 sacks, 2 interceptions, and 1 block kick. That's a mouthful for the 6-2 Orange, who are coming off upset wins over West Virginia and Cincinnati on the road. Doug, how's it going? Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, let me ask you this, Doug. I watching you play the last couple of weeks, I see you move around a lot. They have you on the line of scrimmage almost like a 3-4 outside linebacker. You also play a little further back. If you could guess, how often do you think you play on the line? How often do you think you play a little further back, more at a traditional linebacker spot?
I wasn't going to tell you, Coach Schaefer is a defense. You're out everybody all over the place, and you never know who's going.
just puts me in a good position.
And do you have a preference? Do you think either style suits your game better?
Yeah, I think I would probably do either one. Whatever the time calls for.
Now, you know, in the passing game, you've been involved basically, you know, either way, either dropping back in coverage or blitzing in as a pass rusher. You know, tell me if I'm wrong here. It seems to me you're a little bit more, you know, a little better in pass coverage. Not to say you can't get to the quarterback. You got a sack last week. What's your take? Do you agree with that?
I think, you know, the pass coverage over the years, you know, last year, you know, they played a bigger deal on the line and, you know, getting into the backfield. But a lot of teams that we play now, you know, try to get the ball out a little quicker. So, over the season, you know, I've been spending extra time with coach and, you know, learning concepts and, you know, offensive routes, you know, getting back in the coverage. So, I guess, you know, I've gotten a little better at it this year.
And one of the things about your game that's kind of impressed me the most is your ability to kind of just make blockers miss. Is that kind of the former running back in you coming out?
I think it is. I think it might be something like that. Just kind of like instance, I guess. From running back, you know, trying to make decisions, but a lot of the times I run it back, I was trying to run into people. That's probably why they moved me. I just having that ability to get around blocks, you know, take blocks on, you know, it helps.
Yeah, I know a couple of plays last week we got into the backfield. Their tight end fullback there had trouble even just getting his hands on you. What part of your game do you feel you need to work on the most still, as this is your second full year as a linebacker?
I have a lot of things to work on, you know, especially with it being my second year. Maybe things like, you know, learning past concepts and, you know, dropping and identifying plays before they happen. Get my hands on the blockers, you know, separating, getting off blocks, you know, it's all those things I need to work on.
And talk a little bit about that position change and that transition. You know, from an outsider looking in, it seems pretty smooth. Has it been smooth?
Nah, it hasn't really been that smooth. On the field, I guess, you know, I produce, but, you know, Coach Conley has me all the time, and, you know, Darrell, he helps me out. And, you know, those guys are constantly working with me, and, you know, the shows in the field, but, you know, still have a lot of rough edges that coaches correct me on every week, every day.
I believe that was Coach Marone's idea. Were you, you know, 100% ready to jump in it, or was there a little hesitation there? The position change. When Coach Marone approached you, you know, was there any hesitation at all, or were you ready to go and make that move? And let me ask a little bit in terms of your leadership skills and being a senior on this team. There seemed to be a little bit of a letdown coming off the USF win when you guys played Pitt. Obviously, last week there was none of that. You know, did you do anything different the week leading into the Cincinnati game, coming off the big win against West Virginia?
Nah, I did nothing good. You know, as a team, as me personally, I just stayed on track to stay focused with everything. Stayed in the weight room, you know, got the film, spent some extra time with coach, and just got ready for the game, just like this week against Louisville, was a big one for us.
And what would it mean for you guys to, make a bowl and qualify for a bowl? You need one more win, you might get it this Saturday.
Yeah, you know, that's something that we all hoping for, you know, the bowl comes, you know, that's what we want, but, you know, you just got to focus on the game one at a time.
I see you're listed at 6'2", 226. I've also read your coach Connolly mentioned that he thinks you're a little bigger than that, a little heavier than that. What are your measurables?
I'm probably about 6'3", probably 235, 240 around there. I've been on some good weight.
All right, so they're cheating you a little bit on.
Well.
They're cheating you a little bit on the website. How about your speed? Do you know your 40 time? All right, that is Doug Hogue. Doug, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time. We want to wish you luck this Saturday when you take on Louisville.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, we got a little less than a minute left. Thanks for joining us and being with us here in College Football Insiders Radio. We will be with you every Thursday, and tomorrow we're debuting a new show, The Road to Pasadena, featuring the Big Ten Conference. We're going to focus on the Big Ten. I'll be myself and Lloyd Ribner, the author of Third and Ten. our College Football Weekly column on NFLDraftBible.com. So don't forget to check that out every week, the 3rd and 10 column. And tomorrow, the Road to Pasadena, a half-hour show on the Big Ten, 4 o'clock Eastern time on College Football Insiders Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/College Football Insiders Radio. And don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Football Insiders every Sunday morning at 8:30 on the Fantasy Sports Channel. Looking forward to talking to you next week.